are back. Joe Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, just plain right. Hey, I got to tell you guys, by the way, we got to get used to this. So here we are in the Right Side Studios. We're 2 weeks in, but we're only a couple of days into using our new toll-free number. We have our own phone number. So if you're used to calling the show, because we got a bunch of y'all that call on a regular basis, we have a brand new phone number. Here we go. You ready? It's a special one, 833-687-4448. But the easy way to remember it, I like this, 833-68-RIGHT. Oh, you like how that worked, Boomer? 833-68-RIGHT.
68-RIGHT.
I mean, just, you know, I told you yesterday why I do 6-8, why 6-8 was the number, right?
Oh, yes. It's awesome.
Well, yeah, it was. It was my
what color?
My 68 Mustang.
What color was it?
It was kind of it was a special color called ice blue.
Ooh.
Yeah. It looked white until you got a certain angle on the sun, and then you'd see a bluish tint to it. Oh, man, you wax that thing up, it looked fine. 68 Mustang, 289 bore, 30 over, Edelbrock torquer intake, Holley 600, four barrel carburetor, hooker headers, Mallory Unilite distributor. Ran through all of South Huntsville with that bad boy. Asked Charlene to marry me in it, thinking I'd never have to sell it. How'd that work out? I sold it. had to sell that baby to have our first baby. That was just real life back then. But how did I get off on this? This is your fault, Boomer. How did I get off
it's
on
talking? It's not my fault. It was all about the 68, right?
I'm sorry. Exactly. Thank you. Bring me back to where I'm supposed to be. All right. That's your job to keep me on track. So 833-68-RIGHT. That is the phone number, 833-687-4448. We got so much stuff going on this show now. One of the things that's happening, in case you didn't know, is on our website, we're live streaming the show. So you can watch us, you know, sitting here in the studio. If I'm making faces or rattling paper, you can go, is he really rattling paper? Is that a sound effect that Boomer hits a button on? No, I'm actually rattling the paper. Go to rightsideradio.org. That's our website. And just click on the tab that says live video and podcasts. Boom, there it is. And we've got that going right now. As a matter of fact, I look over at the screen. Oh, look, there's me. I'm sitting on the screen. That's so weird, by the way. I have to dress for radio. No, now I have to dress for video. But okay. Anyway, rightsideradio.org has got a ton of stuff on it, too. Let me just tell you, if you're a podcaster, we podcast this show. Every day, Boomer takes a show, he breaks it up into segments, he puts it out there where Birdman grabs it and then uploads it into virtually every form of podcasting known to man. We are about to hit 65, I bet we may have hit 65,000 downloads. But yeah, the podcast is running hard right now. And I got the stats this morning, Birdman sent them over to me, I think the same ones you were looking at the other day, Boomer, and we still have our second biggest audience is California. So hello, California, I always got to say it. Hello, California, we love you. We love you out there on the left coast, and we're glad to see that we're doing, mission work in a foreign land there. But what are you at, 64,800, is that what I'm saying, this roughly?
64,800.
Yeah, and some change. All right. Well, we'll hit 65 probably by tomorrow then. I love, that's crazy to me, but I love that. Hey Boomer. So, new show, new phone, not new show, but new studio, new phone number, 65,000, man. I mean, we got to find a landmark here soon and give away t-shirts. Are you ready to answer that many phone calls?
Yeah, I'm ready.
You think? Like just give out the number and say, call in with t-shirts and they can start doing it. Is that you're ready? Oh, not right now. I'm not saying right now. Lord, we got a commercial break in a couple of minutes.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. All right. We will do that. Broadcasting, by the way, syndicated now, broadcasting across over half of Alabama, from Clanton up to the Tennessee line, from Tuscaloosa over to Gadsden. You can pick up this show on AM and FM. Out of the Huntsville market, we are at 92.5 FM, 770 AM as a Cumulus Broadcasting Station, WVNN. We're also coming out of the Birmingham, Coleman, Lower Birmingham market with a Crawford Media Station, WXJC, 101.1 FM, as well as 850 AM on WYDE. So we're covering some ground, brothers and sisters, all you Right Side Ruffians, and folks out there in Birmingham land. Start calling the show, 833-68-RIGHT. We'd love to talk to you. Okay, listen, here's the deal. Triple dipper. Triple dipper for today. I'm starting off with broken windows. Let me tell you what got me going on this. I mean, first of all, I was already seeing, you know, some things happening. You're seeing the news quite a bit these days with soft on crime, liberal DAs, George Soros funding the election of the DA, Alvin Bragg, up in Manhattan, or Chesa Boudin, who was just recalled out in San Francisco, or George Gascon, who is the uber-liberal Soros-funded DA in Los Angeles. And they're all around. I mean, we have, I mentioned in my monologue a moment ago, we have a liberal DA in the Birmingham area who has already announced that he is one of, I think, 85 nationwide who has signed on to a letter sponsored by a George Soros-funded organization saying that he will not enforce Alabama's pro-life laws. He will not. Because remember, there's criminal penalties now for abortions in the state of Alabama. Well, okay, how does that work? You just decide that the criminals have a higher level of authority than the law-abiding citizens and victims you're required to defend? By law, you're required to defend? Well, nonetheless, I'm going with the idea that broken windows, policing is a good thing. But it requires the cooperation of those who incarcerate, not just those who arrest. All right? The police powers of the state are not just vested in the men and women in blue. You have to have the cooperation of the prosecutors who will take those crimes to task in a court of law and pursue the necessary convictions, or for that matter, decide that the evidence is not way in favor of a conviction and let justice be served. But justice is not leniency. Justice has to have the ability to provide penalties. And we're seeing too often right now in our communities, even right here in Alabama in some cases, that they don't care about the idea of broken windows. They don't care that it creates civil disorder and unrest. They don't care. We've got to care. I got a stack of stuff on this when we get back. You're going to want to hear it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, solid conservative and just plain right. Sitting here in the Right Side studio, having a cup of Just Love coffee. That's no fooling. I'm sitting right here. Here's the mug. I got switch cameras on me, bud, and I'm gonna go ahead and proof that the video shows that I am indeed drinking Just Love coffee. Well, you can see the mug at the very least. Okay. That being said, all right. Law and order. Law and order matters. That sounds like, okay, oh, Phil, grand revelation. Yeah, I know. Law and order matters, though. And I look at this. One of the things that caught my eye, aside from the fact that I'm seeing a lot about these liberal DAs around the nation and even things that are happening in the state of Alabama, which I'll get to more in a minute. One of the things that caught my eye was the fact that I was so glad to see that our own state attorney general, Steve Marshall, who's been on the show most recently, he literally bucked the system, if you will. So a story here on National Review. Starts off by saying the National Association of Attorneys General, referred to as NAG, the N-A-A-G, NAG, has been ideologically trending to the left, so much so that it's forced a growing number of Republican members to head for the exits, is what it says. This story is dated, by the way, today. National Review, dated today. It's called Republican Attorneys General March into Battle. I tweeted it out this morning. If you follow me on Twitter, you can check it, at Sen, that's S-E-N, at Sen Phil Williams. It says NAG's membership are attorneys generals from the 50 states, plus the AGs from Guam, Puerto Rico, the District of Columbia, American Samoa, the Northern Marianas, the U.S. Virgin Islands. It's been depleted now by 5 members since early 2021. All the departures are Republicans. Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall jump-started the walkout in April of 2021. This was his comment. I missed this completely. I don't recall this. He says, I can't justify spending taxpayer dollars to fund an organization that seems to be going further and further left, he explained. With the money that we'll save by not being a member, I can add a young lawyer to my consumer protection division and yield a far better return on taxpayer investment. Well, soon thereafter, Ken Paxson of Texas, Eric Schmidt from Missouri, and Austin Knudsen from Montana, and Tom Miller from Iowa, all said they were leaving too. They had had it. So what's the big deal? What's the leftward drift about? Well, the Washington Free Beacon did a story on this. And the Washington Free Beacon says Republican NAG members are growing frustrated at what they say is a heavy progressive current running through organizational programming. Things like an institutional, quote, special organization initiative dubbed the People versus Hate, where they deal with, quote, unquote, disinformation. So listen, it just so happens that even though 28 of the 50 state attorneys generals are Republicans, somehow all of NAG's leadership has become liberal Democrat. All right, so here's the deal. If it's happening even at the level that the association, the National Association of Attorneys General, is seeing liberal progressive trends in the enforcement of laws and the recommendations for the enforcement of laws, you have to imagine that it's happening everywhere. And it is. Now, when I talked earlier about broken windows policing, it's a theory that came out, I think, in the 80s. And broken windows policing is something that was advocated and it became very well known under the administration of Rudy Giuliani when he was mayor of New York. At that time, when he took office, Times Square was a cesspool. It was filled with adult theaters and seedy bars and prostitution. Crime was rampant. Tourism didn't want to go down into the Times Square area. And he began doing what was called broken windows policing, basically enforcing it as his administration. And the police, you know, they went right at it. The chief of police was right there with him. And what they did was they said, you know what, we're going to care about everything. We're going to care about jaywalking. We're going to care about loitering. We're going to care about pickpockets. We're going to care about minor drug possession. We're going to care about broken windows. We're going to care about things that might seem small, but when you let the small stuff keep going on, it breeds bigger stuff and then bigger stuff because it's an evidence to the criminals that we're in a place where law enforcement doesn't care. Well, how does that play out in Birmingham? Story here dated April of this year. From Birmingham Now is where I got this story. Here's the headline. Birmingham extends blanket pardons for individuals with marijuana convictions. Well, it says single marijuana convictions. Let me make sure I got the title right. Single marijuana convictions. In an announcement on Twitter, Birmingham Mayor Randall Woodfin extended the city's blanket pardon for individuals with closed single marijuana possession convictions. Instituted last year as part of his Pardons for Progress initiative, Woodfin's blanket pardon addresses a prior closed conviction of unlawful possession of marijuana second degree, which is a misdemeanor, in Birmingham municipal courts. He has authority as the executive of the city over issues related to pardons in municipal court. In addition to the pardons, though, Woodfin himself went on to do a live stream in which he was wearing a promote legalization t-shirt calling for the decriminalization of marijuana as a whole. What is this signaling to the community? What is this signaling to the offenders? What is this signaling to the police who have to police the streets? What it's signaling is, hey, you know what? We can arrest you for drug possession, which sometimes is what they call a lesser included crime. Like if we find you with drug possession, and then we also find you, I don't know, maybe guilty of trafficking because the minor possession ramped up to a trafficking charge. Or maybe we recognize that you had a prior and you're carrying weapons even though you're a convicted felon. There's all kinds of things that can happen when police are allowed to care about the minor things like, oh, we just saw you put that baggie of weed in your pocket. Come over here, please. But if they know that the baggie of weed is something the mayor is just going to wind up, you know, getting rid of, pardoning, because the mayor himself is calling for decriminalization of what is now criminal, why should the police bother stopping that person who might have any number of other offenses that could be stopped? Look at Birmingham's crime rate, one of the highest per capita murder rates in the entire United States. And yet the mayor, he didn't subscribe to things like, you know, broken windows. He went further. He also pardoned $35 million worth of traffic fines and parking violations. Okay, you might go, Phil, it's a parking ticket. Yeah, it's a parking ticket. It's also an indication that someone, you know, chose not to pay their fine. Maybe they couldn't. But there are, see, there are things under the law right now. We have expungement laws. We have the ability to take care of things. And there are groups that will assist you with stuff like this. But when the mayor blanket pardons bad behavior or criminal behavior for that matter, what does that say to criminals? It says it's okay. Well, Rand Paul gave an interview the other day. Story here I pulled off the Neon Nettle, written by Jack Murphy. Senator Rand Paul warned that a day of reckoning is coming for Democrats because Americans are sick and tired of spiraling crime and violence in their cities. Paul accused Democrats of double standards on political violence in the wake of the attack on GOP Rep. Lee Zeldin. He pointed out, Rand Paul did, Rand Paul was actually accosted and attacked when he was at an event, CPAC or something he was at, just a year ago. And yet the media called the violence against him justified. And it's amazing to watch how they're really not going after the situation with Lee Zeldin, who is a good thing federal prosecutor stepped in, because the guy who tried to stab the gubernatorial candidate sitting Congressman Lee Zeldin in New York about a week or so ago was out on the street the same afternoon on his own recognizance. Well, Rand Paul says there's going to be a day of reckoning soon where the people who live in places like New York City, one day they're going to rise up and say, we've had enough. The Democrats are not protecting our children. He says there's going to be a day that people are going to wake up and say, we've had enough. We want law and order. Well, what about places where they literally voted out law and order? What about places where it was more evident, like it was on the ballot? It was like the candidate ran on the idea that they were going to go after the police and defund the police. Well, how about Portland? Story on Red State. RedState.com, dated yesterday. Portland residents learn what consequences are as Democrat policies ravage their city. There's actually a video to go with the story. Of course, I can't show it to you because it's radio. But there's a boomer. But the video is called, I think the theme of the video is, well, if it isn't the consequences of my own actions. Because in Portland, the video interviews people on the street, residents of Portland, who are complaining about the state of things in their city, but yet they keep voting in the people who will do those things, voting in people who will actually run on those things. So the guy who wrote the article, he says there's two ways to respond to that kind of complaining. He said, I can recognize these people are in a tough position. They have no real way to enact immediate change as their neighborhoods are destroyed by homeless encampments that bring with them rampant crime and sickness. Or conversely, he says, I could note that Portland is one of the bluest far-left cities in America, that its residents, including likely everyone in that video, continually vote for Democrats who do nothing but make the situation worse. In 2020, get this, in 2020, Portland's mayoral contest came down to a radical Democrat named Ted Wheeler and an open communist named Sarah Inanaroni, I think her name is. And those two candidates got 86% of the vote total between them, with the communist only losing by 6%. Suddenly being woke isn't all it's all cracked up to be, is what it sounds like. And he goes on to say, unless Portland voters change their voting habits and stop electing these Democrat officials, they're going to wind up having anarchy over order. Well, it goes back to my point earlier in my monologue. It's like that little village in the high mountains of Afghanistan. And I got there and I mean, I'll be honest with you, y'all. I mean, I come rolling in, me and the guys that I'm with, and we're driving two old Toyota trucks, and we're, you know, cruising up through the Selang tunnel and you know, snowcat. And all of a sudden, we get to this village, and I just felt like I was literally in a different world. And I remember thinking, I could just come back in. I could come back and just, like, visit here. This is, like, amazing. And I literally said to one of my guys, it's like the war's never been here. Well, that's the way it felt. Why? Because the folks in that village cared. All right, I got a little more on this. We got to take a break right now. Boomer, go ahead and move us to the break, my brother. We'll do that. We'll come right back. We'll wrap this segment up. But folks, I'm just telling you, man, there ain't nothing wrong with broken windows policing. The only thing wrong with it is when people are more afraid of hurting the criminals' feelings than they are about helping those who need and deserve law and order. Bill Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. We are back. Bill Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. So, hey, interesting thing. I just literally just kind of checked the headlines right as we went to break. And while we were on break, exactly 3 minutes ago, a story went up on Fox News that fits right into what I'm talking about. Here's the headline, dated 3 minutes ago. New York City teen released after caught on video assault on cops has open robbery case. Okay, so here's a story. If you didn't see this, this was just an amazingly awful situation. New York City teenager, and by the way, he wasn't small. Teenager, big kid, though. In New York City teen released after allegedly assaulting, I say allegedly, I watched the video, y'all. I love how they say allegedly. I know they have to do that because they can be, you know, probably, you know, sanctioned if they start saying things like who did something when, you know, it still hadn't been convicted. Let me just say he did it, all right? The video shows it very clearly. Even if he was, you know, even if he was not the one who started it, he kept fighting with the police officer. I don't mean like a little bit. I mean like a brawl. Like, this went down in a subway in New York City, and it was an all-out melee. And this kid was, and it was, and by the way, he may have been a teenager, but brother, he was holding his own, and it was ugly. And basically, here's the deal. He was released. The assault on our officers in the subway is another example of individuals emboldened by a system that just days ago immediately released one of them after being arrested for robbery. Once again, they are shown that there are no consequences for violent criminality, said NYPD Commissioner Keechan Sewell. The 16-year-old, he was 16? He looked like he was like 25. The 16-year-old, whose name is being withheld due to his age, was captured in a 54-second clip, throwing more than 20 punches at an officer, slamming the cop into a metal gate, and then dragging him in the floor into a chokehold. Just 3 days earlier, on July 20th, that same teen was busted for robbery, and again, got out without bail. So, you know, broken windows? Let's talk about it. Maybe if that kid felt the consequences of his actions the first time, he wouldn't have been there to assault the police officer on the second time. Huh, there's a novel idea. Maybe if when we're raising our kids, we tell them don't do it, and if they do it anyway, there's a punishment, they don't do it the next time. That's kind of the way discipline works, right? Maybe when you join the military, if the drill sergeant says do it a certain way and you don't and you have to do push-ups, maybe the next time you'll do it that certain way, right? It's called follow-through. It's called consequences. It's called discipline. It's called order. In policing, they call it broken windows. You see something happen, you address the something, and you don't just let the something continue on, because if you do, the something gets worse. Well, we're just sitting here looking at an article that was posted 3 minutes ago. How timely is this segment of my Triple Dipper, right? The kid was arrested for robbery, and then days later, he is literally on video violently assaulting a police officer in the subway. The same kid. He was let out without bail on his own recognizance. God almighty. Oh, now Charlene has heard me say that. She's going to say, Phil, stop saying that. I'm sorry. All right. Story from the Washington Examiner in the same vein here. Chase Bowden, remember him? If you didn't, he was the liberal, uber liberal, super liberal, like ultra liberal DA in San Francisco. He got elected after being funded in his campaign by George Soros' organization. Well, he got ousted. The people of San Francisco, just like Rand Paul said a minute ago, the people of San Francisco had finally had enough, and they launched a recall effort. You know one of the people who led that recall effort? One of his former associate or assistant DAs, who quit her job because she was just sick of it. Brooke Jenkins. So Brooke Jenkins actually led the charge to get Chase Bowden fired. He would not prosecute crime. And San Francisco, as a result, became one of the most crime-infested cities in the entire United States. Well, Brooke Jenkins is now the new DA, and she resigned her job when Chase Bowden was still in office to lead the campaign to oust him. And she said when she got appointed by the mayor, by the way, Mayor London Breed is a liberal. Even the liberal mayor of San Francisco was sick of it. Anyway, Brooke Jenkins says, I promised the public that I would restore accountability and consequences to the criminal justice system. Well, there's a novel idea. Accountability and consequences. Good heavens. So today I made the difficult but important changes to my management team and staff. Well, liberals are freaking out because she went in there and she fired 15 of her 25 staff. Literally cleaned house. Good for her. Because a bunch of those were on board. They had been hired by Chase Bowden. Why would she keep them? Well, they're freaking out. Here's the deep irony of the story. So she's had internal meetings. The laws in California say you cannot record a conversation without all parties in the conversation giving consent. And yet one of the assistant district attorneys in her office recorded the meeting and released it to the press. That's how bad it is. When the DAs themselves are willing to break the laws to do what they want to do, you can imagine that crime on the street is not being prosecuted. Last one I've got for you as we finish up this segment. Story from NBC News, dated July 6th. New Orleans battled mass incarceration and then came the backlash over violent crime. Well, it talks about a number of citizens and it gives their particular stories, but it goes on to say there's been a political debate consuming the city of New Orleans, that progressive officials have faced the criticism for, you know, trying to tie a rise in shootings and murders and carjackings to the pandemic. Well, no, it's reality. It's their policies. They wanted to sort of depopulate the prisons and deal with mass incarceration and, you know, and not lock people up as much. And so what happened? The city became more unsafe. It goes on to say in a June poll commissioned by a coalition of crime prevention and civil rights and business groups, three-quarters of respondents described the city as unsafe. 84% said crime had gotten worse in the previous year. Calls for service to the New Orleans Police Department tell a similar story. In the year ending in May 2022, there were 235 homicide reports, which was double what it had been the prior year. Even one councilman talked about calling in the National Guard. How about this? How about enforce the law? Allow there to be consequences and accountability. What a novel idea. Broken windows. Fix the broken windows. Maybe you'll fix them. Higher crimes. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. Number two on the Triple Dipper. We're already heading to it. We'll be right back.